Hello and welcome back to the Gubba Podcast. I'm Gubba, a first-time homesteader following in the footsteps of my homesteading forebears. I discuss everything from homesteading to prepping and everything in between, and today we are going to be discussing regenerative homesteading, so what that looks like, how you can do it from anywhere. I am a huge advocate of being able to homestead from anywhere, so this topic is very important to me and so interesting. One of the biggest misunderstandings around homesteading is the idea that it starts with land ownership. People assume that unless you have acreage, animals, or plans to move somewhere rural, they are locked out of this lifestyle. And in reality, regenerative homesteading has nothing to do with square footage and everything to do with how resources move through your life. So think about how neat that is. I love that. Anybody can homestead, okay? Listen to me again, anybody can homestead. You do not need land to do it. So regenerative homesteading is about creating systems that improve over time rather than degrade. You know, we live in this time of convenience and fast consumption, but again, if we take a step back to our ancestors, they were doing things regeneratively. They were creating these systems that got better over time, but then during the generation when people were moving off and going to school, those systems faded, and I feel like we've forgotten how to create those systems. But it's about learning how to cycle nutrients instead of throwing them away from our kitchen to the compost, how to build soil instead of constantly replacing it, and how to work with natural patterns rather than forcing outcomes. So these principles apply whether you live in an apartment, a suburban neighborhood, a rental, or a full-on homestead. So once people understand that regeneration is a practice rather than a place, it becomes accessible. And I love that so much. You stop waiting for the perfect setup and you start working with what you already have. So regenerative homesteading means that every action you take on the land, wherever your land is, okay, an apartment, wherever, has a long-term purpose. So instead of extracting resources and patching problems as they arise, you build systems that feed themselves. So healthy soil feeds plants, plants feed animals, animals return fertility to the soil, water is slowed down and absorbed instead of rushed away, waste becomes input, which is so cool. Over time, that system that you're creating there requires less effort, fewer external resources, and produces more nourishment to the whole. So this is how land was traditionally worked for generations. Nothing was wasted because nothing could be afforded to be wasted. Modern convenience broke those cycles, and regenerative homesteading is what is restoring them. There's been this call back to homesteading, and I love that so much. People living in apartments or rentals, they often feel like they are excluded from homesteading, but these spaces are actually ideal for learning regenerative principles because something must be intentional. So the first place to start is food waste. So most households throw away enormous amounts of fertility each week in the form of kitchen scraps. One of the most effective ways to reclaim those nutrients in small spaces is through bokashi fermentation. I love fermentation. You can do so much with it. Even a sourdough starter is a kind of fermentation. I'm doing a ginger bug right now, which is like to make fermented sodas. So bokashi fermentation works by fermenting food scraps rather than composting them with air. So think of a compost pile outside that takes weeks, even months to compost over. So to do this, you use a sealed bucket with a drain at the bottom. As you cook, you add scraps to the bucket and sprinkle them with bokashi bran, which contains beneficial microbes. You press the scraps down to remove air, seal the lid, repeat this process until the bucket is full. So every few days, you just drain that liquid that collects at the bottom. And this liquid can be diluted heavily with water and poured into soil or down drain to support microbial activity. And after the bucket is full, it sits sealed for about 2 weeks, and then the contents will look fermented, not rotten, and you should be able to smell the difference. Your nose will get used to the smell of fermentation versus rotted when you do more ferments, at least mine has over the course of years in my kitchen. So that fermented material can then be buried in container gardens, added to raised beds, or mixed into soil where it breaks down quickly with without odor. So even renters with no outdoor space can store the fermented scraps and add them to planters, houseplants, or community garden plots. I love community garden plots. I've talked about this a lot. This is a way that you can garden even if you don't have the space. Just check with your county or your city to see if there's garden plots available. It's usually a city thing, or there are some nonprofits who do it as well. But container gardening becomes regenerative when soil is treated as permanent, okay? So instead of dumping pots each season, you amend them. So old roots are cut at the base and left to decompose. Compost and fermented scraps are mixed in. Soil is kept covered with mulch so it stays moist and biologically active. And over time, container soil becomes richer instead of depleted. So these are all things that you can do to better your system. And I love that. There's so much that goes on in our kitchen. I save my scraps for broth. Like I just made a bunch of turkey broth from the turkey carcass on Thanksgiving, and it is golden and it is beautiful. But also when we think of our yards, so if you have a suburban yard, these are often managed in ways that actively remove fertility. Ah, grass is cut, leaves are bagged. Okay, think about how crazy that is. This natural material, leaves from trees, are bagged into plastic and then thrown into the dump to just sit there. What? And then the soil is left exposed. Regenerative homesteading flips that model. So one of the most practical methods for converting lawn into productive space is sheet mulching. So this process requires no tilling and no heavy equipment. So cardboard is laid directly over grass to block light. So you'd want to cut out the stickers on the cardboard or the UPS or FedEx stickers and just have straight cardboard. But then you add compost, manure, or soil to layer on top, and then followed by mulch such as straw, leaves, or wood chips. And the cardboard breaks down, the grass underneath decomposes, and soil life moves upward. So within a few months, that area is ready for planting. You can do strawberries, you can do potatoes, and this method protects soil structure and encourages worm activity, which naturally aerates and fertilizes the ground. And what I love about this is such an easy method, and perennials are especially valuable in regenerative systems. So these are the plants that come back each year because they stabilize soil and reduce labor. So think fruit trees, berry bushes, and perennial herbs can be planted once and then produce for years. So under those plants, ground covers like clover or herbs protect soil from erosion. Around some of my trees, I started planting strawberries, and this helps retain moisture around the tree. Trees, especially when you are getting them together in your orchard and you're getting them started, they need that moisture. And this also helps feed beneficial insects. And instead of separating garden space from yard space, regenerative homesteading blends them. Food grows where it fits. Edible plants replace ornamentals. The entire landscape becomes productive. So this is something that if you live in an HOA, you'd have to look at your covenants. I do not like HOAs at all because they control this. They want the perfect grass, even though the grass, you know, doesn't do anything besides sit and look pretty. And I don't even think it looks that pretty. I'd much rather have flowers or herbs. So check into that if you live in an HOA and see if you can do a regenerative style of your yard. And I don't see why you couldn't get permission, because this brings in the pollinators, the bees, and the butterflies, and it supports the ecosystem. And with that, soil building is the foundation of this regeneration, and it really is not complicated, but it does require consistency. So healthy soil is created by feeding the microorganisms. So our soil is just living, and you want to keep that. You want to feed it. So this means adding organic matter regularly and avoiding practices that kill soil life. So think compost, leaf litter, animal manure, kitchen scraps, and plant residues all feed soil when applied correctly. Okay, so one key practice is leaving roots in the ground after harvest. Instead of pulling plants out entirely, you cut them at the soil level. The roots decompose underground, feeding microbes and improving soil structure. Something I do too is when I pull weeds from my garden, I actually just let them compost to the side in place. And I love that. I feel like I'm giving back, and I know it's weeds, but part of my gardening is I go out and weed, and I don't want to put down plastic, but yes, I can do mulch and other methods. But when those weeds pop up, I compost them. I know this is controversial, but I also view the weed as it came from the land, and I want to put everything back into that. So I do, and I've been doing that for years, and I have an amazing healthy garden, one that works for me. And something else that you can do, like I mentioned, is mulching. So that's such an essential practice that bare soil dries out. It erodes, and I am especially aware of this for my winters when it's harsh and it's wind, and that soil just loses its life. So covering the soil with straw, leaves, wood chips, you want to make sure when you are sourcing the wood chips, ask if the wood chips have been treated with anything. You don't want that to leach into your soil, or even grass clippings. Okay, when you mow your lawn, save those. That protects your soil and creates habitat for beneficial organisms. I love leaves. I love straw. Again, you'd also want to make sure your straw is not sprayed. So those are questions to ask. So even people with no land can build soil through container systems, shared garden plots, or donating compost to community spaces. When I first started gardening, I got one container, but then I made a raised bed and I planted tomatoes, strawberries, watermelon, and they just took off. And it was so fun. So just learning, getting my hands in the soil and learning how to care for these different plants. That was my first little garden, but regeneration does not require ownership, okay? It just requires participation. Whatever you want to put in is what you get back out. And I love that. It's so beautiful. And that also goes with animals. So animals are not separate. They're not a separate part of a regenerative homestead. They are one of the main ways the land heals and builds fertility and maintains balance when they're managed with intention. So on my homestead, the animals are not just here for production. They are here to work the land alongside me. I just love my animals. They're one of my favorite parts of the homestead. They give so much, I give, and we just have this amazing relationship. So chickens, they are one of the easiest places to start, but the key is that they are not allowed to stay in one place too long. So my chickens, they just free range. They're all over the place. They like to venture out. They follow me around, but they also stay where they're safe. I have roosters who look out for hawks. I have a lot of hawks here and birds of prey. So when chickens have unrestricted access to the same area, say you have a covered coop and it's just a covered area, they quickly will strip that vegetation. They compact the soil and create bare ground because they're scratching, they're tilling. And that is one of the amazing things about chickens. Put them on a pile of compost or a pile of whatever, and they are going to till it up. So one thing you could do is use mobile coops and temporary fencing. So chickens are moved regularly so they can scratch, fertilize, and clean an area without destroying it. I think mobile coops are so cool. You can even winterize them and do it in the winter, but you can also think about if you have a free range area, they are composting with their manure, and that is building back, and they're scratching for the bugs. So it's just important to rotate them. Can you have chickens in a small backyard? Yes. If I had a small backyard, I probably wouldn't have as many chickens because they would go through it so fast. I'd probably have two chickens or three chickens and make it more appropriate for the size of the area that I had. And when chickens are moved and treated correctly, they become one of the most effective tools for land management. So they break up manure left behind by larger animals. I noticed that with my goats. They eat fly larvae and pests and distribute nutrients evenly across the ground, which is just so cool how it works. And after harvesting garden beds, chickens can be rotated through to clean up leftover plant matter. You don't want your chickens in the garden while you have stuff growing. Trust me on this. I had watermelons going one year and my chickens got in and destroyed all my watermelons. I was so sad, but they will go in and deposit manure before the beds are rested and replanted. So they are giving back to that soil. And in this system, food scraps become eggs, Garden waste becomes feed and fertility never leaves your property. So you see how it's all working together? And then goats, they play a very different but equally important role. And I have an in-depth podcast of how to care for goats that you can check out if you are interested in the pros and cons of goats and if you're thinking about them. Goats are browsers, not grazers, which means they prefer brush, weeds, shrubs, and invasive plants and your trees too. This makes them ideal for land clearing and restoration. So on my land, goats are used to manage overgrown areas. They also free range, so they're helping me reduce invasive species. Every year I have this gnarly weed that comes in and they just clear house. And it's cool because in their saliva, it has natural particles that will then like kill the plant and it doesn't come back next year. So you see how goats play their role? Like what? They have stuff in their saliva that inhibits the growth? What? So this will then open up space for grasses and native plants to return. I love that so much about my goats. Again, they free range. They know where their food is and they go about the fields and I do not let them into the garden. They would destroy that. Don't let them in the garden. But you can rotate through specific areas. So rotate your goats using portable fencing where they are allowed to browse an area briefly and then move before plants are stripped down too far. So this is an option. Be aware that goats like to escape. And what always made me nervous with electric portable fencing is if they got caught in it and I wasn't around to see it, like the little babies or someone. So I toyed with that idea at the beginning and decided not to, just because that just made me so nervous. What if I'm not around and somebody's caught? And but this encourages regrowth instead of destruction. Maybe you have solid fencing you can rotate them through. That would be great. So over time, areas that were once choked with brush or weeds become productive pasture or usable land without machinery or chemicals. How cool is that? We live in such a chemical-laden, ridden generation. The whole soil's depleted, chemicals everywhere. You just get some goats, okay? So sheep, they also complement goats beautifully because they graze differently. While goats focus on brush and higher vegetation, they love to climb, they love to look up, sheep prefer grasses and lower growing plants. So when managed together or rotated separately through the same areas, they help maintain balance. So sheep graze down grass evenly, which encourages thicker regrowth and healthier root systems when given proper rest periods. Sheep also contribute steady manure that feeds soil life and improves pasture fertility. Same thing with cows. By rotating sheep through paddocks and allowing land adequate time to recover, the pasture improves year after year. Again, same thing with cows. But cows, they even graze differently from the sheep. So the sheep can graze all the way down almost to the ground. Cows like to have it, I think it's 3 inches and above for their grazing. They don't like to graze super short grass. They like the longer stuff. And when I had a cow, I would watch her do that. She would use her tongue and like whip the tall grass and rip it. It was so cool. So over through all of this, with all these different animals, the grass becomes denser, that soil structure is improving, and erosion decreases. So this is especially important on small acreage where land must stay productive without being pushed too hard. So you just want to consider what your land can give you. You wouldn't want to overwork it, like get a whole herd of sheep for a small area. You see what I mean? So the real key to using animals regeneratively is timing and movement. So animals are not meant to stay in one place indefinitely. They are meant to impact land briefly and then move on. And I'm still learning how to work my land a few years in to this because I have my goats. And if you didn't know, I actually have sheep too. I haven't done a formal announcement, but if you're listening, you are the first to know. I got 3 little sheepies and I'm planning to, I am setting up rotation for them. I have a plan for that. Right now they're on hay and they're also grazing. I haven't let them free graze or free range yet like the goats do because they're still a bit skittish and I need to work on that. My goats are not skittish. They come to me every time I'm outside. It's easy to corral them back. If I let the sheep out, I know they would run, but right now they're on hay. But I do have different paddocks that they've been rotating through. They're really cool. I will have more on that soon. And when you are rotating, that movement mimics natural grazing patterns and gives plants time to recover, deepen roots, and build resilience. So even on small properties, this can be done with that portable fencing, smaller paddocks, or simple rotation schedules. The land tells you what it needs if you pay attention, okay? When plants start to look stressed, animals move. When regrowth appears strong, they return later. So there's just this beautiful back and forth going on, this sway of life. And every animal truly fills a role when placed intentionally. So chickens clean and fertilize and till. Goats restore overgrown land and give the most amazing milk. The milk from my Nigerian dwarfs, next level creamy, amazing. Sheep build pasture and they give lambs, and they give their wool, and they're working the pasture, and together they create a system where fertility increases instead of being depleted, and the land becomes healthier the longer it is worked. So you see how it's this fertility coming back up. So this is what regenerative homesteading with animals looks like in practice. The animals are not separate from the land. They are a part of how the land heals. So another thing with regenerative homesteading is water. Water is so central. So water is one of the most overlooked aspects of homesteading, I would say, yet it determines whether land thrives or it struggles. So most modern landscapes are designed to move water away as quickly as possible through gutters, drains, and hard surfaces, which does have its role. Like around your house, you don't want water to accumulate because that is going to have problems with your foundation later on down the road. But regenerative homesteading slows water down and allows it to soak into the soil, again, in appropriate areas. So rain collection is one of the most simplest ways to do this. So gutters can be directed into rain barrels or storage tanks rather than storm drains. Or you could even redirect your gutters to water part of your garden. Even a single barrel can collect a surprising amount of water from one rainfall. So the water can be used to irrigate the gardens, trees, and can be used for emergency purposes. For people in apartments, rain collection might look like placing containers on balconies or patios to catch runoff. In yards, overflow from barrels can be directed into those garden beds or tree basins. Like I said, trying to get an orchard going or trees established, they need a lot of water in those first 2 years. So excess water benefits plants rather than flooding areas. So think about this. When you are on your homestead, where can you direct your water? What are you going to do with that water? It's such a crucial and vital resource. Mulch plays a critical role in water management. Covered soil absorbs and retains moisture far better than bare ground. Healthy soil acts like a sponge, holding water during dry periods and releasing it slowly. So on sloped land, planting along contours and creating shallow channels helps slow runoff and prevent erosion. So even small adjustments like shaping soil around trees to catch rain can dramatically improve water efficiency. So with watering my trees in my orchard that I've been working on for 5 years now, I've learned you can slope away, but then you build like a channel around the trees about 2 feet out, like a ring, and that helps collect water. And you want to put the water away from right at the center of the tree, so then they develop strong roots and diving into growing food, because that's the whole purpose of my orchard. I want this generational food source. Growing food without preserving it creates a gap in this whole regenerative system. So you put time, energy, water, soil fertility, and care into producing food. But if that food is only usable for a short window and the excess goes to waste, the cycle's incomplete. So regenerative homesteading looks at preservation as the bridge between seasons, because abundance is only useful if it can be carried forward. Again, it's great if you just feed yourself from your garden or just make enough to feed yourself and your family. But if you're wasting a ton, like what was the purpose? I mean, you could put it back into the soil as compost, but I feel like it has more value as food. So preservation allows the work you do during the growing season to continue feeding your household long after the garden has slowed down. It reduces dependence on outside food sources, smooths out seasonal fluctuations, and honors the resources that went into producing that food in the first place. So every traditional food culture understood this. Preservation was not optional. It was how people survived and thrived thrived year-round. So canning is often the backbone of regenerative pantry because it allows you to preserve complete meals, broths, meat, vegetables, and fruits in a shelf-stable form. When you can food properly, you are essentially capturing the harvest at its peak and locking it in. So tomatoes become sauces, bones become broth, meat becomes ready-to-use meals. Instead of relying on freezer or last-minute store runs, your pantry becomes a working extension of your homestead. And say your freezer goes out, what do you do then with all of that meat? So also, fermentation plays a slightly different role, but it's just as important. So fermenting vegetables, fruits, and even drinks like sodas, like you can do with your ginger bug, that preserves food while also transforming it. So through fermentation, beneficial bacteria break down sugars and starches, making food easier to digest, and it's extending its shelf life naturally. So vegetables that might spoil quickly, like cabbage, cucumbers, or carrots, become foods that last for months while supporting gut health. So like fermented cucumbers become pickles. So fermented pickles or sauerkraut from cabbage. In a regenerative system, fermentation is another way nutrients are protected rather than lost. So something is even small as those beneficial bacteria. So drying is one of the oldest preservation methods and works beautifully for herbs, fruits, and even some vegetables and meats. I also dry flowers. I actually just opened up a jar of dried rose petals and I was like, wow, this smells so good. I might infuse it into some lotions or something. But herbs that would lose potency when left fresh can be dried and used all year. I also have some Thai basil that I use for tea that I dried. Fruits can be sliced and dehydrated for snacks that don't rely on packaging or refrigeration. So drying concentrates flavors and nutrients while requiring very little equipment, making it accessible at almost any scale. You can also freeze dry. The equipment to get into that is a little more expensive, actually a lot more expensive. You can get a dryer for like $50, whereas a freeze dryer is a couple thousand, but then you can preserve food for up to 30 years. And that takes all of the moisture out, and that's how you're able to do that. Freezing is often used alongside other methods, especially for things like berries, chopped vegetables, or prepared meals. While it does rely on electricity, freezing still plays a role in reducing waste and extending harvests. Many homesteaders use freezing as a temporary step before canning or fermenting. So I made broth from the frozen turkey carcass from November, so a few months ago. So especially during peak harvest times, when you have so many tomatoes and berries coming in, you have to sometimes utilize the freezer when you have all these things coming in at once. Root storage is another method that often gets overlooked, but fits perfectly into regenerative homesteading. So root vegetables like potatoes, carrots, beets, onions, and squash can be stored for months in cool, dark conditions without processing at all. So this method preserves food in its most natural state and requires almost no energy input beyond proper storage conditions. So that's so cool. I would put potatoes into my cellar. I have a little bit of a cellar where I also store canned goods. Things that you need to be aware of with that is pests or rodents. So set up traps, seal the area so you don't have rodents coming in. Keep an eye for bugs or whatever rodents and pests you have in your area. But what all of these methods have in common is that they allow abundance to be honored instead of rushed through. They turn peak harvest seasons into that steady nourishment throughout the year. They reduce waste and they make the homestead, wherever your homestead is, more resilient. So for many people, canning is the piece that feels the most intimidating. There's a lot of conflicting information out there, and modern kitchens rarely teach these skills anymore. That's exactly why I created the Homestead Prepper's Guide to Canning. It's a course and it walks you through canning in a clear, practical way, covering water bath canning and pressure canning, safety, equipment, and how to confidently preserve the foods you're actually growing and raising in your kitchen. Because canning is not just about filling jars. It's about understanding why certain foods are preserved certain ways, how to avoid common mistakes, and how to build a pantry that actually supports your homestead and your family, and you have food that you want to eat. When you know how to can properly, it changes how you grow food, how you harvest, how you garden, and how you're planning your seasons. And also, say you get a cow, or you know, you go to the butcher and get a cow in the fall, you can plan your your canning to rotate that out of the freezer, because for me that always makes me uncomfortable having all the meat from the cow or the pig in my freezer, because what if the power goes out? Well, you can it, so then you have it shelf stable. So preservation completes the regenerative loop. The soil feeds the plants. The plants feed the household. The excess is preserved. You have animals in there, and the preserved food feeds you when the land is resting. That rhythm is what makes homesteading sustainable long term, not just productive in the moment or for the season. So if someone's serious about building a regenerative homestead, preservation, I feel, is not an option. It's foundational. It's what our ancestors did in all these different kinds of ways. So homesteading has also never really been a solo activity. Historically, communities shared tools, laborers, seed, and knowledge. So regenerative homesteading still thrives in the community. I have learned so much, especially when I was starting out, from neighbors who taught me how to milk. I milked my first cow at my neighbor's, and then after I had my cow, they were so much help. I also learned about goats from someone I was sourcing meat from. So, and then I was sharing that information back. I then turned around and taught a neighbor how to milk down the road and how to care for cows. And now I'm teaching how to care for goats. So it's really cool, this community that comes together when you start doing these things and wanting to learn. People want to teach. So community gardens, which I think are amazing, allow renters to grow food. Seed swaps preserve plant diversity. Bartering eggs for produce or labor for land access keeps resources circulating locally. So I used to trade with my neighbor milk for strawberries from their garden, and they were the best strawberries I have ever had. So good. So regeneration extends beyond the soil, extends beyond your kitchen. It strengthens relationships and creates resilience at every level. So regenerative homesteading does not require perfection. It doesn't require ownership. It doesn't require a timeline. It begins the moment you stop wasting resources and start cycling them. Like, hey, these kitchen scraps I could turn into broth. I could ferment them. I could turn them into compost. You can build soil in a pot. You can ferment scraps in a bucket in your kitchen. You can catch rain in a barrel. You can grow food where grass once sat. And I know people are probably thinking and have thought through this just popped in my mind, well, what about chemtrails? The rain is dangerous in the soil. Yes, I know. Oh goodness. So that, in addressing that, because even yesterday I posted about drying my linens outside, and a lot of people were like, well, chemtrails, I don't put my linens out. Man, it's difficult, because yes, they are absolutely raining down chemicals from the sky, but at what point do I let it completely control my life? If I'm going to, you know, be worried about chemicals in the sky, I might not go outside. I should just not go outside at all. I actually shouldn't even breathe because it's in the air. So do you see where you have to set up limits to where you're not living in fear, but you are living where you're aware and you're doing what's comfortable for you, okay? You can filter the water. I love the feel of my linens after they've been out in the sun. So I get that a lot. Well, what about chemtrails? Oh, I'm totally aware. I've been on chemtrails. When I used to post about them years ago, people were like, you're crazy. That's not chemtrails, until it became mainstream and whoever in politics started talking about chemtrails. Then people were like, oh yeah, chemtrails. Okay, so I've known about them for a long time. I had my tinfoil hat on for a while, but I don't let them control my life. I'm still going to go outside. I'm still going to garden. I'm still going to put my linens outside. I'm still going to go outside and breathe, okay? Because they are not going to take my happiness. I refuse. That is how they win. If they take away your happiness, they take away your joy. So don't let them do that. But you can also work with animals on small scales, depending where you're at. You can preserve what you grow and share what you have. Sharing canned goods feels so good. But the land, it responds when it's supported, no matter how small the space, okay? Over time, systems build on themselves. Effort decreases, fertility increases, and confidence grows. So that's regenerative homesteading, and it can begin anywhere. I hope that you enjoyed this episode. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed it, you can check out my other podcasts on homesteading and some conspiracies in there. And I will see you next time. And don't forget to sign up for the email newsletter so you never miss another episode. Have a good day. Bye.